Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Dear gas prices, go take a hike. Toyota is the number one retail brand for electrified vehicles for 22 years. The Toyota hybrid lineup brings efficiency with power and savings with style. Not to mention top tech to help keep you connected. Plush premium interiors and the most advanced Toyota safety features. So, now you know who you're talking to. Toyota, the number one retail brand for electrified vehicles for 22 years. With a hybrid or electric vehicle built for every driver. Seriously, dear gas prices? Do you really think you could stand in our way? Think again. Toyota hybrids. Find yours at Toyota.com. Toyota, let's go places.
Based on manufacturer estimates, CY 2000 through 2021 sales.
Welcome back into another edition of The Kickabout here on The Blue Room. I am your host, Rob Vera, joined this week by Matt Jones and Patrick Ridge. Patrick, you are new to The Kickabout. You're not new to The Blue Room. You've been on The Blue Room before, and that's why I asked you to join. Patrick was on. Were you on Subs Weekly recently, Patrick?
Yes, Subs Weekly, and I've done quite a lot weekly, Subs Weekly over the last few months. But yeah, the last week, I think, or the week before, it all kind of merges into one at the minute. Before the international break, it was definitely one. To, maybe before the Norwich game? Can't remember, Matt. Yeah, it's all gone a bit quicker.
Yeah, I think it's pre-Norwich, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track of anything just the last year and a half. I think we're all kind of like, we've been like that, especially over here. I know you've had a bit more freedom over there, Rob, but last season was just a blur of dreadful game after dreadful game after dreadful game, and yeah, misery. So good to be back on, or well, on The Kickabout for the first time.
I think Patrick is one of the main James Rodriguez ultras. I think last time he was on, it was a very disappointing day because he was on the brink of leaving or had left.
Yeah, I think he just left. Yeah, yeah. I know.
I had to
get a bit of a cry out after that, but you know, got through it in the end. But now he's evil. Now don't want anything to do with him. Laughing at that video of him in his stupid glasses, looking like Deirdre off Coronation Street a few weeks ago. But yeah, I still miss him.
Well, I don't think you're alone. I think you could parse out that whole Hamas thing relatively easily. I mean, I think we're going to be okay now that he's gone. But I would have loved to have seen him, you know. I mean, I think it's a damn shame that the club never got that part figured out. And obviously a lot of that was out of their control with the craziness of last season. But, yeah, it's really unfortunate that, it didn't work out. But hey, you know, just file him under, you know, throw him on the pile with Samuel Eto and a few other guys that were here and gone way too soon. I've that's how weird the season has been. These international breaks at the beginning of the season make the first like 20% of the season feel like half a season. Like, I feel like we're almost at the halfway point. We're not even remotely close to that. And James leaving seems like ages ago. So, well, for those of you who are regulars of the Kickabout listening, first and foremost, thank you. Secondly, Mark is once again, believe it or not, on holiday. I think Mark is definitely one of those guys who tries to what's the expression, vote Labor, live Tory, or something
live
like
that. Tory, vote Labor. Yeah.
It's going on his vacation. It's a good motto to live by. To be fair, you can't.
Yeah,
it.
No, that's. Yeah. I kind of subscribe to the same sort of theory generally. Go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say that man loves holidays more than just he's constantly away. He's just constantly away. And I think he has been saving them, hasn't he, with the pandemic going on. And now he's just, you know, going on a big wanderlust spree in the final weeks of the year.
Hey, if you got the means, if you can get away, especially after the past year, I say go for it. But
it's totally born out of jealousy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hell, I'm jealous of him too. I think it's funny because Mark is probably the closest in terms of skin pigment to me because he's always going somewhere with sun. And you know, I'm Latino. So, I mean, that's my excuse, but I'm definitely out in the sun more in America. I'm sad that Mark's not here, but it does give us an opportunity to, kind of shuffle the deck a little bit. Patrick, this is your first time on the Kickabout. I'm going to ask you a relatively standard question that I would ask of anyone who's coming on for the first time. Tell me one non-Everton, non-football thing that you're into.
Well, music. You might be able to see the records behind me. I've got to build that wall up a little bit. Morning Glory. So, and there is a big Verve post just over there, which is just out of sight. So, yeah, really into that. Right. Really looking forward to getting back to some gigs again. I've got 3 at the end of this month, start of next month. A band called the DMAs, or DMAs, Everton fans as well. Well, the lead singer's an Everton fan. And it's a shame, really, because they're an Australian band, so they haven't been able to get over at all until now. So really looking forward to seeing them. But there were like 3 gigs that I had booked, kind of spaced out every, you know, 6 months. And they've had to, because they're from Australia, having to come over and do a tour in like 2-3 weeks, so they've all been squished together. So I'm gonna go from like nothing to having 3 gigs in the space of 2 weeks. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I mean, I'm double vaccinated, everything. I've had COVID. I'm feeling like I'm invincible. So I'm raring to go again. And then, well, probably, yeah, just can't handle a hangover anymore. That's taken its toll in the last year and a half. Got really good at drinking from home last year. And then, if anything, my tolerance has gone down now. So, yeah, just struggling and getting older.
I think we all got good at, doing things from home. I joke with Matt all the time and my friends over in Liverpool that they are professional drinkers. And I am merely a mid-seated amateur drinker compared to them. But I imagine being at home certainly made certain people more proficient than they maybe had been before. I'm a professional dope smoker, so you know, that's I say that, of course, with the caveat that if my employers are listening, that it is fully legal and I am licensed and it is for medical purposes primarily. So having said all, well, that's good, Patrick. If you're into music, clearly you and I are going to get along, and you're going to be on future shows where we talk. Hopefully, there will certainly come a point where talking about Everton isn't as fun. That's kind of an inevitability at a certain point. But luckily, we're definitely kind of at an early stage of the season where it's been pretty fun to talk about Everton. I don't know about you guys, but this particular international break has somehow felt longer than others. And I don't know if that's a thing that I say every time we have one of these, but maybe it's just because of all the newsy items that have happened in this period since the international break, primarily Newcastle's takeover by the brutal monarchy of Saudi Arabia, or maybe it's not technically, I'm sure they
no, it's not them, it. Rob. The Premier League have not said them, it's not bro. Actually them. There's a distinct, didn't you see that? There's a difference between the PIF, which is headed up by the Saudi Crown Prince, and the Saudi state, which is also headed up by the Crown Prince. They are completely different things.
Yeah, they are. It must be. And look, in fairness to what you've just said, Matt, I mean, royalty exists on a different plane than the rest of us. Maybe it is possible for the Crown Prince to literally be two entities to himself at the same time. And he is, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, maybe we're being hard on him. I feel like every day he wakes up and he has to, you know, has to manage all of the, you know, the situation with his dozens of wives and, you know, who he's going to behead that day. And
allegedly,
you know, which how much of the environment he's going to destroy and which journalists he's going to murder. It's like,
see, Patrick's definitely going to fit in. He's already getting the allegedly's in on this before you do, Rob.
No.
Well, if I can be more direct,
you can say anything. You can say anything you want as long as you put allegedly on the end.
Well, you know what? I'll take the allegedly away. like let's say that's the whole point of this forum. Like, if for those of you who follow me on Twitter, you know my very clear feelings on this matter. Now, granted, I will tell you, and I'll come to you, Patrick, on it first, because I'd like your thoughts on it too, because I do think that there are multiple discussions kind of happening at the same time, because I think that the people who try to, especially on the kind of the Newcastle end of things, they would say they always kind of their retort of the day is sort of, well, how would you feel if you had had this terrible owner for all this time and suddenly you are now presented with this opportunity to be part of a big seven. And again, I don't know enough of the specifics of what the spending will actually look like to go ahead and crown them the next Manchester City. I'm not quite certain that we're there yet, though. I don't think that's stopping the Geordies from getting way ahead of themselves as they are wont to do. But I do understand that, like, on the one hand, yeah, we all kind of make our peace with billionaire owners, all of whom have their own skeletons in the closet, all of whom became billionaires not by being super nice and moral individuals throughout the entirety of their careers. Like, I understand that. I suppose the question becomes, you know, what is the line? What is this alleged Premier League? What do they call it? The some kind of criteria test that they run to see if you can.
I think it is.
Yeah, something like that. Like, I'm just wondering, like, if the Saudi regime can't fail this test, then like what's going to happen when Kim Jong-un says, I want to own a team? What's going to happen when Putin wants to own a team? I mean, he probably already kind of owns Chelsea indirectly anyway. I mean, I guess that's the question, is like, is there a line? And is it something that we just sort of have to accept as we increasingly have to accept the broadening uneven play, you know, playing field that these clubs kind of exist under this banner of a quote league?
Well, I think we saw where the line is for the Premier League. The line for the Premier League is broadcasting rights, and that's all that was stopping it. It was, you know, it was the Saudi Arabian state basically would block in Bein Sports in their country, and as soon as that, there's no coincidence that as soon as that ban got lifted, then suddenly this move was allowed to go through. That's all that was stopping it. And whether, I mean, I don't think any right-minded empathetic person can be okay with that, and I'd count, you know, every Newcastle fan that I know among those people. And I think most Newcastle fans as well, most football fans, know that that's wrong. But ultimately, I don't think anyone should be surprised by it. I don't think anyone should have been surprised that that was really the only thing that was stopping it. A lot of people like to think the best of people, like to think the best of the Premier League. And for them to come out with this, you know, they've seen a legally binding document that ensures that the Saudi state have got nothing to do with the PIF, which is, you know, directly run by the monarchy. But, you know, whatever. And as for the situation itself, I suppose it's maybe it is that we've all bought into this product and that this is ultimately where it's led up to. Maybe it seemed inevitable as well. Every country, the UAE, Qatar, they all have their own super clubs. Of course, Saudi Arabia are going to get involved down the line, and this is just the first step for them. And eventually, I guess the move for a lot of those state-funded organizations will be to move into the US market as well with US sports teams. Obviously, I know it's a completely different ballgame altogether with some of those franchises and how they are, but you might see in 10 years' time that it's the US market that they're starting to move into, and this is how they're going to develop. I can see why Newcastle fans are excited. And again, the Newcastle fans that I've spoken to and I know, they're excited for what their team might be able to do now. They're also not condoning the fact that their owners are horrible, you know, horrible people or whatever, their owners are now linked to human rights atrocities, to the, you know, the murder of journalists, to the, basic banning of being able to be gay or the treatment of women. These are all awful things, and I suppose the question becomes whether football fans are the ones that should, or you know, football is the one that should be like the moral arbiter here. They should be the judge. Surely, actually, it's on the world governments to stop this happening, and not football fans. At the end of the day, but then again, the argument is, well, hang on, if normal people are so, normal people, for lack of a better term, are so easily swayed by the big shiny thing saying, oh, we can come in and buy all these players and appoint an amazing manager, then it just shows that sport washing works, doesn't it? That's the kind of part. I'm really muddled on it in the sense that you can probably tell by this rambling answer, in the sense that I think it's awful and I think it's wrong, but at the same time, I can't begrudge any Newcastle fan for getting excited by it either. And I can't say it's their fault, and I can't say that it's Mike Ashley's fault for selling it to them. I can't even say it's, I don't even know if it's the Amanda Staveley's fault for backing, you know, building up the move. That's just what she does. And this is kind of the result of where the game's gone and been building up to. Where does it stop, though? I suppose that's the issue now, is where does it stop? If they can just come and buy a football club in Britain... Yeah. And you can bet, without going into like the whole corruption thing or anything like that, like they've obviously got government that ties to the government. They've got ties to every government in the West. You know, the UK aren't the only ones doing arms deals with Saudi Arabia. It sometimes gets played out like that, but France do it. I think France sell jets to them. I'm sure the US will do it as well. Do you know what I mean? There's a reason that they've got their fingers everywhere, you know, in all the pies around the world, and that's because of the resources they have. There's also a reason they picked Newcastle. I read a really good article, it might have been in the Financial Times, but I probably got that wrong, stressing how as a strategic city, well, because of Newcastle's location, you look at the kind of going into kind of a different realm altogether here, but the renewables market that's building around Europe and the UK at the minute, you've got a kind of a port city there in Newcastle that has been underdeveloped by successive governments, not just Tory governments. You're talking in the last 20, 30 years now. There's going to be a lot of money pumped into that city now. If you look at what Manchester City's owners have done with Manchester, all the property development around there, this PIF fund, this is what they're going to do. They're going to pump money in so that they've got a strategic base to go into those markets now. You've got all the offshore wind farms out there, massive, massive developments. You know, well, there's a bigger reason than just football for this, isn't there? And I suppose it becomes. This is where the Gary Neville's argument comes in about having an independent regulator. but then would an independent regulator be able to stop this? Can you stop someone buying something that they want to buy? I don't know. Unless governments get involved, ultimately, I don't think you can, because we live in a free market, don't we?
Well, yeah, yes and no. I mean, there's got to be a lot. I suppose I think the bigger question is I think it's two part. And Matt, I'm curious your thoughts on this too, because just placing this from an Everton perspective, we obviously are intimately aware because we spend every single day either thinking about it, writing about it, talking about it, what have you, about Everton's particular financial situation. We are better off than the vast majority of clubs in the world, and yet in our own league we are certainly not in that top echelon of financial strength, and so we kind of understand where we're at. I suppose I wonder, for an Everton supporter, and I suppose this question is different, or this answer is different for every one of them, if you had the ability to push the button to magically have suddenly the resources that a City or a Chelsea have, would you do it pretty much no matter what, with the idea, kind of as Patrick articulated, that, well, you know, every government on earth is already involved with these. There's nothing that can be done. There's no point in trying to stop it or to say, you know, say any of this matters. So I just want to see my team be really good. I want to see us buy the best players. Do you get into that trap of, and maybe it's not a trap for people, of just kind of relativism and saying, well, hey, you know, if it's not us, they're going to buy someone else, so it might as well be us. I guess I just wonder, I think the other part of it too is who is responsible, because I think once you start making it a question of, well, does every government on earth have to do this? And I don't really buy that. I think ultimately the Premier League, is probably the party that I'm most aggrieved with, from the standpoint that they pretend to have standards for things, they pretend to have rules for things, but they seem very comfortable kind of interpreting them or suspending them or bending them or outright ignoring them at any point in which a check clearing is really the only thing stopping it. And so I guess I wonder, you know, that two-part question for you, Matt, is, you know, what would you feel as enthusiastic as most Newcastle fans if Everton were in this position? And who is responsible ultimately for saying no, or drawing a line, or even defining what that line is?
No, I wouldn't feel comfortable with it. I think it's just this whole thing throws up so many questions and quandaries that are just very specific to the modern football fan. And it's stuff like how should I feel about having a regime like that as the 80% stakeholders in my football club? What should I do morally there? Because there's no real precedent for, you know, there's been some sort of precedence for this in City, and obviously what's going on at PSG, but not to this extent before, and not to with a regime like this before, but they are so involved. And it's like, as a fan and someone who, you know, likes to, if you're a fan of Newcastle, you like to think that you've got good morals and you stand for the right sort of things. What's the right thing to do in that situation? Because I was speaking to Paddy about this a little bit on Subs Weekly, yeah. And there's been I'll say the story again for anyone who's not listening. There's been a restaurant in Liverpool this week called Il Forno, which has been in people's bad books because they apparently provided food for the Conservative Party conference. And there's been stories in the Echo about it in the last few days, and I think people saying it was actually them. But let's just say hypothetically, whether it was or it wasn't in this situation, that they did. And a restaurant that you liked gave food to an organisation and provided service to an organisation that you don't like, and you don't have morals that align with or beliefs that align with. You can sit here and go, well, actually, there's a million other restaurants in town which are quite nice. I like them, so I'm going to go there instead and just give off that restaurant. I'm not going to go there anymore because they've done this thing. You know, I can move on. It's not really like that with football, is it? It's not like you've got a choice of football clubs you can go to in case the one that you have supported for a while does something that you don't agree with, because it's entrenched in your personality. it's entrenched in your community, and you've been going there solely as a football fan to that one club for your entire life. And I think that's where it's different, and that's sort of where sports washing comes in and why it becomes so effective. Because what you've already seen over the past few days is Newcastle fans going to, and again, this isn't all of them, but a sizable amount of them going to ridiculous lengths to defend these people and what they've done. And you only have to go back a couple of years ago and look at the outcry, almost universal outcry, for Wonga coming in as a shirt sponsor for Newcastle, which is effectively a payday loan company, which gives people money and then loads of interest onto them, and people have gone into terrible positions over it. And the backlash on that was, on being a sponsor on a shirt, was almost universal. But to this,
do you think that's
quite, there's an upside though with this though, Matt? There's a real upside, a tangible upside that the fans see as soon as the first big name player signs a deal.
Well, but even before that, Rob, even before that, now, and effectively, what a lot of these fans have become is, it's horrible to say, and again, it's not their fault, and there's nothing they could do about it, obviously, but they've become propaganda tools. Already, already that's what one of the people wearing masks with bin Albin Haman on outside the stadium, people dressing up as sheikhs outside the stadium. That is sports washing in action. And I think Patrick makes such a good point in regards to why they picked Newcastle, and they would have thought about this carefully. And I think obviously there are economic factors in regards to all the things that Patrick mentioned there, but what you've also got is you've got a club and a fan base that were just desperate for the new owner to go. And it obviously, as we've seen in the past, it doesn't matter who came in. As long as you're not Mike Ashley and you're walking through that door, you're going to be treated as a messiah or a messiah-like figure by a football club that has got a history of making messiah-like figures out of people like Kevin Keegan and like Alan Shearer. They are the perfect Petri dish for this sort of thing to be grown. And it's horrible. I don't know. I can't sit here and say what I would think and how I'd react if it was Everton, because we're not in that situation, of course. It is difficult for those supporters because you've got a tribal instinct as a football fan. You've got faith in your club and you've been going to them for ages. But I can't honestly sit here and say I would be comfortable with a regime like that owning Everton. Not necessarily for myself and what goes on there, but for women who sit by me at the match and how they might feel awkward about having a regime that's involved in the football club that don't have the best record when it comes to women's rights, or to someone that
have the best record is putting it lightly,
of course, or in the same breath, someone who sits next to me who may be an LGBTQ+ person, and how do they feel about it? And that's why it was really sad actually last week to see a statement from the Newcastle LGBTQ+ group, United with Pride, who sort of just played down the whole thing a little bit and said, hopefully this could be the start of a dialogue with Saudi Arabia about changing their minds. And while that's a nice romantic sentiment and maybe comes from a good place, it's utter bollocks, and it's not going to happen, and it's not going to have any impact on the way in which those people think. So I think to sort of sum up how I feel about it, if it was us, I would be very uncomfortable with certain aspects of it, I think, for sure.
Well, and Patrick, I think part of where I'm going with this too, and maybe this is evolving even as we're having this conversation, is one, an acknowledgement that I don't know that there is some easy answer here. And I don't think there is. To Matt's point, I don't think that you can suddenly just turn off that thing in you that supports the club that you've supported your entire life or for a significant period of time that you've given your heart and your soul and your, most importantly to them, your money to for this period of time. I mean, you're kind of pot committed, to use a poker term, right? Like, I do understand that. I suppose what I would ask of Newcastle fans is there a meeting in the middle on this, which is, yes, it's okay to acknowledge that having more money and having more financial power is a good thing. Yes, it's also acceptable to say that, look, I'm a fan, I'm a supporter, but I really can't do anything about a billion, billionaires from a, multi-trillion pound nation state deciding that they want to buy my club. Like, you know, I get that part too, I suppose. And Matt brought up the weird kind of rhetorical twists and turns and back bends that people are doing to try to justify this. I suppose the thing that I want is an acknowledgement from Newcastle fans that their club is owned by horrible, evil people. There's nothing they can do about it. And they're going to just go ahead and continue to enjoy watching Newcastle. Like, I can even admit, for instance, like, I felt that desperation when we didn't have money to spend. I felt that desperation when the club refused to ever sign a new right back, despite our 50-year-old right back still being the starting, player. Like, I've felt all those things. And I have even said, I'm sure if someone could do a Twitter search, that, let Usmanov, hell, let Putin come in and buy Everton. If that's the way it's going to be, if this is going to be a league that's sort of owned by, an assortment of kind of seedy criminal types, like, let's just admit that the Premier League is what it is, which is kind of a cabal of mafioso types who've decided that their plaything is going to be professional football in the United Kingdom. And let's just say that that's what it is, because, I think when you brought up, for instance, that, well, maybe they'll break into American sports and whatever, like, there are a lot of, at least now, there are quite a bit of regulations in terms of certain foreign investment coming from certain types of countries. Now, it doesn't mean that America won't sell its weapons to Saudi Arabia. Oh. So don't get me wrong. I don't want to get into the fact, like, the idea that America is somehow doing this better, but the leagues over here have, trust me, they have, as we've seen in the news recently in the NFL, we have bad owners, bad coaches, racists, homophobes. Like, we've got our own set of problems here for sure. But none of the billionaire owners of any of these teams over here are representatives of an entire monarchy, an entire nation state. And so I guess what I'm wondering, Patrick, has there got to be at some point an acknowledgement by fans of not only Newcastle, and maybe this is bringing to light a conversation that City fans who have deluded themselves into thinking that their ownership is a bunch of good people, or, what you've seen with Chelsea, does this bring up or broaden a bigger discussion about a greater acknowledgement by fans of the kinds of people that actually own their clubs and who run this sport?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you mentioned that how the Premier League is basically just a, cabal of criminality, and obviously without casting
aspersions. Not every owner, everybody. Clearly, but
yeah, not everyone. Well, yeah. I mean, let's face it. Tony Bloom at Brighton, and I can't remember the name of Brentford's owner, but they made all their money in gambling. I'm not at all saying that Mashiri, and if Usmanov is involved with Everton, which it's pretty clear he is, like, in some capacity, they're clearly not going to be innocent. Like you said earlier, no one becomes a billionaire by being, an angel, unless they're extremely fortunate. And I suppose the point is, my issue is, it's kind of that time to me has been and gone. We saw with the Super League incident, we saw in that instance with the Super League how I think it was over-exaggerated how much impact the fans actually had. I think the fans coming out in such numbers did help, and the, Gary Neville going on his monologues did help. But really what stopped them was the money aspect. That's all that stopped them. And they'll come and do it again. And it'll probably work next time, because, as you said, they've not had any punishment. And because the leagues are scared and UEFA are scared. It proves with Real Madrid and Barcelona and Juve, UEFA tried to take them to court, and they're not going to be able to do it, because these clubs know that they've got, it's not even the standing, they know that legally they're on safe enough ground to go and challenge these things and do it again. I totally agree, Rob. I don't think we accept it. We acknowledge it. We acknowledge that football, especially in Europe, is just becoming more and more, that it's these nation states buying up teams, buying up players, whatever it is. I mean, we use James Rodriguez as an example, going to Qatar. You know, I mean, players have been doing that for 20, I think Pep Guardiola went to Qatar 20 years ago, didn't he? But like, you know, it's all being used because the Qatar have got the World Cup in next year and they're going to try and get big stars over there. There's a reason.
Speaking of sport washing, the Qatar World Cup is just one giant exercise in sport washing.
Yeah, exactly. And FIFA and every nation is part of that. And obviously we've kind of seen the Norwegian team were one of the first ones to do it, kind of threatening a boycott in a way, but we'll have to see if a boycott actually happens. At the time, we just don't know yet, do we? And I definitely haven't got the answers. I think what we would all like to see is that the Premier League to take that kind of, to have a firmer hand with it, and to have that, because to me, yeah, it was just proved that last week, as soon as those piracy issues were resolved, then it's fine, this can go through. Now, that's obviously wrong, but for the Premier League to have a backbone, it's then, well, who regulates the Premier League? And at the moment, it's nobody. But I'd like to think an independent regulator would be the answer, but I don't know if it will be, because then who regulates the regulator? And it all just becomes, it's just a never-ending kind of cycle. And yeah, I'm not torn on it. It's awful. And I'm with Matt and you, Rob. Like, yeah. I'd hate Everton to be in that situation of the fact that we've got this nation state with these, atrocious human rights issues, and everything that they do is against everything I believe in, or everything that, you read about is against everything that I believe in. But I don't know how we can stop them. If the Premier League aren't going to stop them, I'd like fans to have, I think there is definitely a group of fans, and I think Man City are probably, know this as well, given they've had owners like that for so long now, that you can kind of have a foot in both camps. You can really be against your owners and even to an extent maybe protest against them, and you can still support the team. But is that difficult? You can say that, I really don't agree with the people that own my club. I don't want them to own my club. You could maybe even, like I said, you could maybe even protest against them. You both made really good points, though, that, they picked a club in Newcastle, that's not going to happen, at least for the time being, unless it goes atrociously wrong. Because they were so desperate to get rid of last owner, and they're so desperate for success. So, yeah.
I wonder, too. I mean, I think the bigger issue, too, and I know that I'm probably the one who uses my real estate on this podcast to kind of talk about the larger systemic issues of the Premier League and kind of the indictment that they're not really a league. They're more of a confederacy of clubs that happen to be in a competition together. But, as we've seen time and time again, and name your issue, whether it's a complete lack of transparency, no financial reforms, FFP being sort of selectively applied when it seems to matter, or, when you see how clubs were completely, how the clubs who literally conspired against their own business partners to try to form the Super League get away with nothing. There was a nominal fine. Like, all of these things are symptomatic of a league that isn't really a league. And therefore, because they have not addressed their financial and systemic issues and tried to establish a pyramid that starts with the Premier League on top that is actually viable and sustainable financially, they're going to be more susceptible to just anyone who rocks up with the load of cash saying, I want to buy a club. The Premier League has not, if the Premier League had been run in any sort of competent, efficient sort of way, especially when you consider the sheer amount of money that they get to mine from TV contracts and from player and image licensing and the club's brands and all in the history, there's such an untapped well of resources there that have just been kind of, they're all there, but it hasn't ever been organized in any kind of, meaningful, sustainable competition that promotes, anything but the same handful of clubs winning everything all the time. And so you then get a model of a league where the richest clubs always get rewarded. They are never punished. They are never held accountable. So there's going to always be those imbalances there, and therefore they're going to be more susceptible when someone says, I want to come in and buy into this league and don't worry about my background or where the money comes from or anything like that. Or who's going to stop me? To your point, Patrick, who's going to stop them? Well, in a healthy functioning league, there are actual rules that are enforced. There are standards. There are things that say, yeah, like we need someone to buy this club, but there's got to be, and this is breaking news for you guys, if you think that there aren't other billionaires on planet Earth that could have bought Newcastle besides Saudi Arabia, one of the most brutal monarchy, dictatorship, murderous, anti-gay, anti-women, anti-journalism, anti-free press, name your bullet point. It's all of it. It is, if you were a kid and you watched the G.I. Joe cartoons, they're Cobra, okay? They're the Decepticons. They're the bad guys. And the league just kind of looked at it and said, well, what are you going to do? And if what are you going to do is the standard, then let's just acknowledge that that's the standard. Let's acknowledge that the Premier League has a really nice lion inside of an emblem that they put on every jersey and that they market as a TV contract and a package that people like me in America get excited about watching for whatever reason. But let's not pretend like this is any kind of competently run league, because competently run leagues don't accept such blatant criminality within their ranks without any resistance whatsoever. And that's just kind of the bottom line.
I think I saw on, like, I can't remember who posted it on Twitter, someone saying who would actually fail this fit and proper persons test, you know, which historic, like, bad person or bad regime wouldn't be able to buy, you know, where's the benchmark? But
Hitler have bought in? Could Kim Jong-un have bought in? I mean, what's the line? I don't know what the line actually is.
But just one other thing I want to say about it, just try and bring
we can move on
a bit of levity. If there is one football club that can fuck this up, it is Newcastle.
That's
because,
true.
Because comedy decisions. I think they're more Everton than we are.
Because they can get relegated this season. That's why they could really fuck this up too. They may not be able to spin their way out of this in January. Believe it or not.
I speak sometimes about Everton having Evertonness under the skin, under the fingernails. Newcastle are the same with Newcastleness. That they are a club that's just a magnet to comedy and misfortune and just dejection. And I think we already saw on Twitter today, and very early days, but some reports about some of the people at the PIF who were involved in this not necessarily agreeing on things has gone through too quickly, and could hold up decisions like Bruce getting sacked and stuff like that. And I'm just going to rub my hands together if it all goes like that. I mean, I think most people will be looking for, Spurs probably won't do the footballer word a bit of a favour and win on Sunday. But I think most people will be looking to them to sort of rain on the parade a little bit, won't they?
Well, I think you're right. If anyone can Newcastle this up, it's Newcastle. I think that there's definitely an argument for that. Okay. Let's get off of my weird moral high horse for a moment. And I want to talk really quickly about the weekend. It's funny, Matt, because I will very quickly be charged with, overly focusing on the Yerry Mina aspect of this, but I'm really pissed about this whole three fixture international break that CONMEBOL has tried to slip through here. I don't know why. I think it's so reflexive and so easy for them to go, yeah, well, COVID, and so therefore we had to have three fixtures in this break. And I think that's ridiculous. I mean, COVID should be the reason they don't have any of these dumb fixtures at all, or they I don't know. I could get into the whole broad question of, is qualifying for the World Cup, does it really require years and years and years of games ahead of them that are massively disruptive and terrible for player health and fitness and all these things and whatever? But then the answer inevitably is money. So let's move. I want to move past that. I think we all kind of agree international football is fucking garbage most of the time, except for the Euros and the World Cup.
Nations League games are pretty good this week.
I
enjoyed that.
Yeah, they've been, I mean, they're okay. I mean, they've manufactured some relevance by branding it the Nations League, which I'll admit, I at least kind of get that a little more than whatever they were doing before. But I want to ask about the weekend, just in terms of, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit of guesswork or what have you, but after this interminably long international break, I think it's a good time on the show to remind everyone that Everton have been playing pretty well. We ended with the draw against United and, you know, currently sit in, am I correct, guys? We're technically fifth, but we're level on points in third or what have you. I mean, I don't think anyone could have really asked for a much better start than this, especially given the context of all of the injuries. For me, I look at this upcoming run of fixtures that Everton have in front of them. And it's funny because everyone sort of pointed to the beginning of the season and that initial run of, quote, I hate to say easy, but let's just say lighter fixtures compared to some of the brutal starts we've had in the past. And they saw an opportunity there, which by any objective measure, Everton certainly excelled by taking care of business for the most part. Yes, I would have loved for their somehow Davis and Mina to have combined on an onside goal. Yes, I would have liked for us to have gotten all 3 points at Leeds. But in general, I think you can only play the schedule in front of you, and Everton have done really well. But now we go into a stretch at home against West Ham, home against Watford, away at Wolves, and before we have Spurs at home, and then followed by City. So it starts to get a little tougher there, though I'm not really sure. I feel like Spurs are all that tough this season. Guys, where do you – just to take your temperature a little bit, Patrick, I'll start with you. What do you anticipate for Sunday in terms of what's available to us? I'm a little skeptical that Yerry Mina will be available. I do have fear of a Holgate, Keane, maybe. I think Luka Dean is back. If you read the tea leaves of his Instagram, I think he's going to be okay to go. I have no idea about Coleman. Godfrey is, I thought, was better against United, but he's been struggling coming back from COVID. But other than that, you might have Richarlison back. You might have Calvert-Lewin back. In either scenario, other than what you're not certain of, maybe in the back four, you've got to feel pretty good about us at Goodison against West Ham, given that we may have some reinforcements coming back in general. How are you feeling about Everton going, you know, coming out of this break and going into what really looks to be a pretty pivotal match compared to the stretch that comes ahead of it?
Yeah, I think we've got to be confident. I think that's the issue, and it does seem like so long ago, and you've just got to hope that there's not been any momentum kind of stalled by the break. We were all hoping that this international break could come at the right time because our squad was so depleted. But we've now got that horrible feeling that we're going to come out of it and still have no players. But we just don't know, do we? Benitez, he might do his press conference on... He might do it on Thursday, he might do it on Friday, we don't know yet. And we'll hopefully find out more then. I got a feeling that we're going to end up doing with Dean what we did with Coleman, which is just play him less than 10 days after he gets an hamstring injury, which just isn't the smart thing to do. Like, but we might have to do it because of the position that we're in. But
we've got a backup left back. We've got a backup left back we can put in, right?
Yeah.
15-year-old lad in the under-16s, yeah.
Yeah. Pickford's left-footed, isn't he? Put Vez Begovic in net and put Pickford on the left.
It's time for the Les Roberts, Tom Davis experiment at fullback, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
Tom so. Davis anywhere but midfield. I'm confident because we're at home and because we have been playing well. But West Ham, it's going to be a tough game. I think that I do think we're two very evenly matched sides, very evenly matched squads. Even I'd argue West Ham have a little bit more depth. with the kind of with how Moyes, you know, what with what Moyes can get out of players. But I think Benitez is very similar in that they're both that kind of manager who gets the most out of limited resources in a way. It's hard to put your finger on it until you know the full situation. If we knew that Calvert-Lewin had been training and knew that Richarlison had been in full training, I'd be really confident that we could get something. If we knew that Yerry Mina would be back. But then again, it's just looking like it might be one of those. I think we're fortunate that we're playing on Sunday, not Saturday, because an extra day in that instance is going to make all the difference. You know, if Mina gets, are they playing Thursday night in like?
They play Thursday. They play Thursday against Ecuador at 4 p.m. my time, which is 10 p.m. on Thursday night your time.
Okay,
as has been pointed out, like, you're right, it's good we have that Sunday. I was talking to Patty earlier this week. I think one of the other primary concerns, regardless of whether Mina starts or not, which by all indications he will absolutely start in this game, it's that plane, that flight is still just a incredible haul. Even on a nice cushy private jet, it's still, you know, travel, you know, lagging is a thing. You know, jet lag is a real thing. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose that's the issue, isn't it? And then it's even if he's fit and he comes back and he has a day of training, a bit like the issue with Luka Dean is, if he's, you know, with Luka Dean, obviously it's kind of the hamstring strain, and really you just need to give people 2 weeks rest and just be like, no, you sit this one out because it's going to make sure you don't miss the next three games like we've had with Coleman. Whereas with Mina, it's a bit like, well, yeah, he's had that long haul flight. He's had three games in the space of a week. I don't know if they're playing in Colombia or playing in Ecuador, but playing at altitude possibly. All those things add up, and then okay, he might feel fine, but then you throw him into the game on Sunday, and then suddenly the adrenaline runs off 3 days later, and you know he picks up a niggle in training or whatever. So Benitez has got to balance all these things out. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to Friday or whenever the press conference is, and being able to kind of know to an extent who we've got. Benitez might just tell a load of lies like they all do anyway. Or he'll tell the truth like he did last time, but then we still managed to lose 17 players in one training session. Big Dunk came out with his, you know, dodge a wrench. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball technique, I think. And then it was just that must be it.
Any reference to the movie Dodgeball is certainly welcome on this podcast. Just to clarify, Patrick, they are playing in Colombia.
Right, okay, so that's a bit
Mina is double vaccinated, so that he won't face that hurdle. So yeah, it really is just about, you know, what they think there. But Matt, I it's weird because I, on the one hand, have just enjoyed this stretch of Everton football that has been filled with a squad who has excelled despite the players missing. They have not leaned on the excuses as they have often done in the past. I've joked before, I know probably even with you, Matt, that Everton is the sort of club where they are really good if the temperature is just right, the breeze is below a certain threshold, and everyone had a certain kind of meal that day and woke up on the right side of the bed. I think the larger identity that this particular iteration of Everton seems to be kind of emerging with, and maybe this is a managerial thing. I mean, I think the manager certainly deserves a lot of credit for it, but the side seem to kind of look at what they have as opposed to what they don't have, and they just kind of go forward with it. And they seem to have taken that sort of collective, I hate to overuse the term us versus the world sort of mentality, but there's definitely been this feeling that Everton can kind of overcome these things. But I'm also kind of cognizant of the fact that you can only overcome missing quality players so many times before it comes back to bite you. As Patrick alluded to, West Ham are a deeper side. They're a quality side. Has the international break and any of these ambiguities about who will or won't be available kind of made you less enthusiastic about Everton coming out of the break? Or are you still feeling like this is a club that will find a way to cope, or this is a squad that will find a way to cope on Sunday, regardless of who's available?
Do you know what? I'm like really excited for this game. I'm just dead excited to go for. I'm more excited than I should be for playing West Ham at home. And it's just like, I think maybe because it's on a Sunday and it's on the telly at home, that's the first time we've had like a weekend game like that for a while. I'm really excited to see West Ham, because I think when we last went to the game and saw them, they were a bit of a laughing stock, to be honest. You know, they weren't doing particularly well. They were fighting relegation, and sort of over the course of the last 2 years, they've become this really good side. I mean, I was just looking at their predicted 11 for the game this weekend. And I know they lost against Brentford before the break, but you know, Fabianski, Kufal, Zouma, Ogbonna, Cresswell, that's like a properly solid back four. Suchek and Rice in midfield, again, two quality players. Bowen, Benrahma, Fornals, Antonio. You know, that's a really good side.
Yeah,
that's a really functional side. And I think what you were saying there about how Everton have been able to sort of cope without the injuries, and you know, with the injuries rather, it has been really good. I think one game you do it against Norwich, you are the worst team in the league, but you do it well. And I think they're going to do it at United against a team that, as so many people have said, have got ridiculous quality in individuals, but as a cohesive unit, they're pretty shocking, aren't they? They're not a well-coached outfit in that sense. I think where you could see the lack of quality for us and the lack of key players for us come undone is when you're playing up against a really well-organised, really functional side that have got, a bit like us really, at our best, that have got sprinklings of quality in there. And they can just drag you into the battle, they can frustrate you, and they can make you feel a bit edgy at home, and then they just hit you with a stunning goal from Antonio or a set piece from Suchek, and they can just grind you down a little bit and nick the win. But you think
Nikola Vlasic gets in this game? Because
that's a
storyline that is just so Everton waiting to happen.
As if Yarmolenko wasn't enough. you know, Everton.
Patrick, let me just tell you, if you haven't heard, I used to be in love with Yarmolenko and obsessed with the idea of us getting him, to the point of almost ruining my marriage, looking at the phone in the middle of the night to see if we'd signed him. But yes, but go ahead.
It's also going to be mad, isn't it, the whole Benitez Moyes thing? Because, you know, go back 15 years and that was the total opposite, wasn't it? We had Moyes, and you know, we loved him, and they had Benitez, and you sort of looked at him as this far, like, oh, he's, you know, I don't really like him. He says snide things about us. He's got a bit of a cocky way about him. And now it's the other way around. That's going to be mad in itself. But I suppose it's a testament to both of those coaches, really, as well, when you think about it, that at various points in the career since leaving Everton and Liverpool, respectively, they've been written off and, you know, effectively been accused of being dinosaurs and, you know, from a previous regime, and here they are now, all these years later. One's done an unbelievable job at West Ham and got them playing great football, got them in Europe, and has sort of fixed a club akin to what we were saying about Newcastle before, that felt like they were unfixable at one point and were always going to get in their own way and mess things up. And he's gone there and he's done it. But he says, obviously, isn't at that point with us yet, but has made a really good start as you know, has been able to overcome all the things that we were worried about were going to happen early in the season as regards to people turning on them after three games. And I think it's just good for them and testament to their longevity in the game that they've been able to mainstay. So there's just loads of little interesting things, I think, going into this one. And obviously, you haven't even mentioned about us and how we're going to line up. But from nothing whatsoever, and just watching videos and seeing what Twitter's been saying, it feels like Richarlison maybe is a bit closer than Calvert-Lewin at the moment.
Yeah, it looks that way. It looks that way. I'm total Instagram sleuth guy. Like, I overread all of the signals that these players share because, and again, I will point out, guys, that if you are occasionally frustrated trying to figure out who will or won't be available, just remember that the club, and not just Everton, this seems to be in the sport in general, just feel zero need to, you know, update you with any, like Patrick alluded to it before, because I've railed on this idea before. There's nothing that Benitez says that I take at face value. And that's not just because of Benitez. Like, whenever Carlo Ancelotti did it, Koeman did, like Silva did it, they all do it. I think they sign a contract at Everton that says they will only play 4-2-3-1 and they will always lie in press conferences about player availability. Like that's the thing I'm certain about. But
could
no, just, to your
could,
point,
could Matt, say a couple, but, make a couple of points about this game.
That's where I was going.
Really, I want Dom and Richarlison to both be fit, obviously, but I also want Anthony Gordon to start for the first time and a full Goodison because he deserves it after the way he played against Man United. But obviously, if Dom and Richarlison are fit, then he won't do that. But I think it'll be great for him to get that first start at Goodison because he put in a proper dogged, determined performance away at Old Trafford.
And agreed. I think
it would be totally warranted for him to play on Sunday. And the other thing is, I think if Everton win this game on Sunday, you are bouncing out of that ground thinking, what can these lads actually do this season? And I think you start to get really excited about where we can go with it. And I know you said on last week's kickabout, I think it was, Rob, that you gave it the old Football Manager line of we're taking it one game as it comes, we're not getting carried away, we're not getting excited. But I think if you can get past a really tough team like West Ham with a couple of injuries, going into Watford at home next week, a newly promoted team, and you know, like I said, some quite favourable fixtures, I think all of us will start to get a little bit excited about what this team could potentially do this season.
All we need to do is we just need to avoid any threads on Twitter that all here's the next five games. How many points are you going to get out of them? Because inevitably, as soon as they happen, your relegation form for the next month. And I'm with Matt. I mean, it's that hope. I don't want to get too hopeful about it because I'm taking it one game at a time. I think. I'm not sure who it was on this podcast early in the season kind of said that I think that it's helped because of the resistance in a way to Benitez. Most people have taken a step back. I certainly had, like when this time last year, which was this time last year, wasn't it? When we were all so happy about the start we had, which it was a fantastic start. I know it's the same, well, less points actually than we have now. Everybody kind of got carried away because of it was Carlo Ancelotti and James Rodriguez and all of that. And whereas I think because of the initial kind of, like I said, resistance to Benitez joining or that kind of, it was kind of like, well, let's just see how this goes. And let's just it's been more akin to that. Let's take it one step at a time. At the same time, it does mean that, while the highs might not be as high, the lows aren't as low. I think after the Aston Villa game, we all realised that, look, that was just a game that was settled on fine margins in a way, and it showed the weaknesses in our squad. So I suppose the only hope is, as Matt mentioned, that I think we're coming up against a side in West Ham who are kind of like Villa, kind of at our level, and we've just got to hope that we've got our best players available, or if not, our players out there putting their very best performance.
I think what Benitez has done, sorry Rob, is made us all really, really scared of looking like dickheads. Like, because
never stopped us before, Matt.
Because we've looked like dickheads in the past, obviously. But I think if we were to go like fully in on Benitez now, and then it all went tits up, and you know, say we beat West Ham, and everyone was singing his name after the game, and he was giving it loads, and those banners of the Watford game, and all sorts with his name and stuff like that. Yeah. And then
it went all over again.
But then imagine if that all happened, and then it went tits up. Yeah. Then can you imagine the grief we'd all get for going fully in and fully behind a Liverpool legend who was in charge for the greatest night in the history? Can you imagine the grief we'd all get off them saying, well, you all loved him after you'd had seven games and you were singing his name and you had banners and stuff like that? I think what he's sort of done, he's like a buffer to us going fully in on it. And that's good. It's a good thing. And I think we're all scared of, well, no one's sung his name yet. We've had some great results and great nights and days at Goodison since we come back. But we're all sort of like, I don't want to go there yet because, you know, further down the line, I might look very, very silly if we do.
Well, but, you know, I think that's a really interesting point in that the function of the expectations game that only he can really pull off because of the reaction to his appointment, I think is an interesting thing to point out. Like it's kept people from getting too far ahead of themselves, and yet it's enabled him. Well, and it's really enabled us because we're so hesitant to focus too much on the manager right now when things are going well. We've just been able to pour our attention into just the players and the players doing basic things well and performing well. And I think it's done a lot to, I feel like we're having fewer discussions, for instance, about formation and particulars of philosophy. And we've just gotten back to this idea of, I think I've referred to in the past as, you know, totally boring competency, which no one wants to talk about competency, but man, competency feels good when it's pulled off in the right way, right? Like, I think that Benitez has found a way to just help us to function on a basic level that, let's be honest, we just haven't been able to do in years. And so I think that, you know, I think that that has probably been kind of the unexpected blessing, if you will, of Benitez, is that he has allowed us to not really have to focus on him too much. Because Matt, I think you made the point earlier, you know, when the appointment was coming down, and I think it was a very astute point, that the real test is going to be, you know, if he falters early in the season, there's a run of a few bad results, how quickly will things turn on him? I think that the fact that it hasn't gone badly, I think we kind of would assume that, well, then the opposite would happen. Then everyone would go crazy about it. But I think now, I think because of what we've just experienced, and you can call it the traumatic effect of Carlo Ancelotti sort of pulling the rug out from underneath a lot of fans who had really grown to adore him, I think a lot of fans are just hesitant to get too emotionally attached to any manager. And the fact that Benitez is the perfect vessel for that, right? I think that if the team is doing well, we can just focus right now on the fact that Everton are good again. They're good right now. They are doing the core tenets that we all talk about ad nauseum: the hard work, the endeavor, the maximum effort, the playing for the bag. I can't even say playing for the badge. It just makes me kind of giggle every time I say it. But you know, it's like all those kind of foundational things, we've been able to focus on that, and he has not been the story. And I think he wants it that way. I think he does not want to be the story right now, and I think that that serves him well. And if that means that people are a little more hesitant to start singing songs about him this early, it's not the worst thing in the world. And by the way, Matt, I would point out that we're going to get grief no matter what anyway, though I will freely acknowledge that getting grief living in Liverpool is definitely different than me feeling like, you know, Everton fans are getting grief from thousands of miles away. So, I'm excited. You know, I'm kind of like you, Matt. Like, I'm excited about the opportunity this weekend. And really, I think that with the way that Everton have been playing, you're just back to what you hoped you'd feel again, right? Which is, I just want to look forward to watching them. Even if and my broader point last time out on Kickabout with Mark was not that people shouldn't dream about finishing top 4 or 6 or whatever. I mean, aspirations are a part of sport. I think it was just more along the lines of, let's enjoy this. Let's enjoy the process of this group under a completely new, you know, leadership in terms of the manager and a new approach and this sort of mentality that they've developed. It's been good. So let's just kind of enjoy looking forward to games again. Let's enjoy watching Everton be Everton. And what, by the way, being Everton may tie back to that David Moyes feeling that we used to feel about how, well, look, you know, we don't have the advantages that some others have, but we have this collective ironclad spirit, you know, in the team and the work ethic. And you know that they're going to be, you know that Everton are going to always play hard and, you know, play very competent, be very structured, be very sound defensively. And that's kind of what we've gotten back to. I think the hope now, obviously, is that we can take that next step forward, which is winning things. And, you know, hey, that's a journey. And I'm willing to see how it plays out, because what other choice do I have? Guys, I want to end today regaling you very quickly with the story of what happened to me this morning and me and my lovely wife this morning, and to ask you if you have ever been through what the most perilous experience that you have ever been through with nature has been. I'm a little wired today, more than normal, because we were woken up about 5:15 this morning by our iPhones simultaneously going off. And the thing about your iPhones is that if you go into the settings, it's amazing how many layers upon layers upon layers there are in terms of like notifications and this app does this and this security thing does that. But one thing that the weather service here or kind of, you know, public authorities can do at any time, and you don't even realize it, is that they can push that button and make all the phones in a particular area just go off. And basically, we were woken to an alert on my phone that said, there was a tornado warning issued for your area. Please take cover. And so we immediately turn on the television as we're gathering our things up. And we find out that a tornado has touched down about, I think at the time we woke up, it was about 4 miles from my house and it was headed northeast. And what they do on the weather here, and of course I live in what is often referred to colloquially as Tornado Alley. And what I did was I looked on the screen, and on the weather screen, they literally start listing the time at which this tornado on its current trajectory will hit certain parts of the city. I am near the state capital of Oklahoma, and it said state capital, and I had five minutes to get myself, my wife, and my cats down to my basement. And you could hear outside the rain blowing sideways and a weird noise, and it just didn't sound like anything that I had heard before. And I've lived through some bad weather here, but I've never had a tornado that like woke me up with so little notice, had all the things going on, and of course every scenario playing in my head. Do I put on shoes right now or do I not? Do I need a spare battery? Do I need some water? The cats. Oh my God, the cats. Got to get the cats.
Will I still be able to record Kickabout later?
How am I going to do Kickabout? What if I can't watch Everton this weekend? All of these existential things were flying around in my head. I was praying to gods known and unknown.
What about the arena? You never know. Yeah.
It was intense. And then we stayed down in the basement. I had my little phone so I could kind of keep up with the broadcast going on. And at a certain point, they said that basically it had just missed my block by a few blocks and had gone just slightly north and east and headed in that direction. And it finally passed. I don't think, as tornadoes in this state go, that it's as bad as some. It's not nearly as bad as some tornadoes that have just. I've actually been to, you know, there's a suburb of Oklahoma City called Moore where the famous like F5 tornado of 1999 hit. There was another one a few years ago. I went down there because one of my best friend's sister, her house was completely destroyed. It looks like an atomic bomb was dropped on the place when you see like the giant tornadoes and the damage that they can inflict. So it was pretty scary this morning, but all is well. It's actually really nice outside now. There are tree limbs kind of, you know, strewn about the streets a little bit. But overall, we got out of this very lucky. I just wasn't able to go back to sleep after that. So, Patrick, my question to you, have you ever been confronted with something in nature, weather related, a flight that was a little weird in terms of, you know, having kind of a rough landing? Have you ever encountered anything that made you start questioning whether or not you'd get to a podcast about Everton ever again?
I can't say that we have many tornadoes in Wakefield, to be fair, in West Yorkshire.
Yeah, I know
safe
that.
Here. I reckon it's up there with the safest places in the world. Like nothing. It's never too warm. It's never too cold. It's always just right. We did have, although there,
oh, it's pretty cold there
was an
me,
earthquake, but there was like a very minor earthquake a few years ago, I remember, and I think I slept through it, and that's how minor it was. No, nothing on the nature side. We've had some bad flooding around here, but nothing ever, like the worst it got is my old high school, kind of, I think I was in year, like I'd just started high school, so year seven for us, and there was a really big playing field at the back. And a kind of little stream or beck ran through it, and it overflowed one day, and we all got to go home early. And then I remember walking past it that evening, and it was just like a lake, and there was some kids who went to my school, and they somehow had got a dinghy. I don't know why they got a dinghy, and they were going around on the what was the playground. I've went to New Zealand a few years ago, and the flight, I think it was the flight over there, was pretty rough. Like, we went over Iran and then going over India and things like that, and that was, the turbulence was bad. And I'm not an awful flyer. I don't like it, but I don't dislike it. You've just got to do it. The only real time. And I plan to keep it. Plan to stay away from any tornadoes, to be honest.
Don't come visit me, guys. You're just asking for it.
I love that. Rob was like, oh, it's got a tornado over my house today. I was absolutely shitting myself. And Patrick was like, oh, we had an overflown back. some of the kids are out in dinghies in the playground. That sounds quite nice and pleasant, that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it was pleasant. There were some awful things in that bed.
I suppose there are things that, depending on where you live in the world, you're going to have weird encounters. Like, I always imagine that our Blue Room pal from Down Under, Mad Max himself, Ryan Reynolds, I always imagine that he has had like a close encounter with a great white shark at some point, and I've just refused to hear otherwise. That I think that Ryan has had to like fight off a great white shark at some point and survive.
I feel like
Ryan is a legend that none of us fully understand, and I'm not gonna be dissuaded from that. Matt, you've traveled a lot. I get, by the way, that you live in a very, you know, other than the wetness, the constant wetness and the kind of miserable weather that I guess is not miserable for you guys as much as it is just kind of the way it is in England. But have you ever had an encounter with nature on your travels, a flight that was weird, anything like that, that just made you feel like, oh my God, this could be it?
We've had some snow here.
Fuck you, I swear. Oh, we've had some snow here.
The train stop, places close. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
John Terry scoring in the eighth minute of 5 minutes was the worst thing that's ever happened to you.
I was in Mexico when there was a hurricane that came past.
There you go.
That was about 2015. About 12 years ago it would have been, actually. Yeah. So it was a pretty bad one, but Patrick's gone.
He'll be back.
Yeah. So that was my bad memory of that, though, is I slept through it when it came through the night, and the waves were really fun beforehand in the sea, and I got told to get out the sea by the lifeguard. No, not really. The only other thing is we were in Guatemala like a week before that big volcano erupted on that volcano.
Oh, yeah.
We were on a beach in Australia a week before someone got killed by a shark. So, no. Just always a week, the right side of things, by the sound of it. Yeah.
Well, you guys have lived some really coddled lives, I just want to say. Here I am, a survivor of a near-death experience. And what's funny about this story, guys, is that in a few weeks when I bring it up again, I'm going to talk about the light that I saw and how I saw the ghosts of all of my dead relatives. And I had a moment of clarity. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you've flown a lot though, Rob. Have you ever had any bad plane?
Well, Yes, I literally was on a flight from Denver to Oklahoma City where the pilot came on and said, instructed the crew to prepare. We may need to prepare for a potential emergency landing, emergency crash landing. And the woman next to me, who was a total stranger, just grabbed my hand and just looked at me and just held, like she was squeezing the life out of it. And I just, you go into those weird moments. But normally my thing on flights is you look at the flight attendants. If they're chill, then you don't really have anything to worry about. But in this case, they were nervous and you could see it. And it was,
it's horrible.
It's horrible. And you don't ever, like, you know, and it ended up being fine. It was just a really rocky landing. And you know, plane travel is exceptionally safe. But it's bizarre. And by the way, a testament to climate change that we, you know, tornado in October is ridiculous. I mean, we had ridiculously hot weather this past weekend, so it was just perfect conditions for some weird weather. But, you know, this climate change stuff is odd because we're getting weird weather patterns at different times of the year. And it's just one of those things. But for those of you who are listening, if any of you have had any kind of weird, and by the way, I don't want to call what I went through this morning near death. That's way dramatic. It was just, let's just say it was pretty trauma. It was kind of traumatizing. It was a little scary.
Has it been snowing near where you are? Let us know.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know what? You people would be pissing in your pants right now if you'd been through what I went through this morning. And I might have as well, but don't worry about that. So, if any of you are listening have, yes, encountered a light snowfall on a cold winter day, like Matt described or anything like that.
Have your travel plans been disrupted by snow?
And with that, we're going to skip Scary Movie of the Week just because I feel like I just did my Scary Movie of the Week this morning, and we'll resume that pretty soon. I'm going to see that Halloween Kills movie this weekend. I'm pretty excited about that because I'll watch any Halloween movie that they ever make, as you guys know. But yeah, Patrick, really enjoyed it. I'm going to have you on to talk about music and the Verve and Oasis and, you know, all of that really? Northern English rock at some point. I'm sure. This is also a great opportunity for me to plug A Storm in Heaven, the Verve's first album, which is their unrecognized masterpiece, by the way. Everyone should listen to that, especially if you're into getting buzzed while you listen to music. And other than that, we're going to have all the normal things coming up over the weekend. We will have post-match. Matt, games at Goodison, so I assume you're going to be doing post-match maybe at Rigby's or something like that with some of the crew.
Yeah, try and rope some people in. Yeah, it should be good. All right.
We got a weekend preview coming up as well, Matt.
Yeah, speaking to Jacob Steinberg from The Guardian Friday morning. Yeah, so he's always great on West Ham. So
that's a good get. Jacob Steinberg is very sound on West Ham. That's wonderful. So, all right, guys. Well, for Matt and for Patrick, this is Rob, and we'll look forward to next week and more Kickabout here on the Blue Room. Take care. We'll see you guys later.
Progressive Snapshot can save you money based on how you drive and how much you drive. So the safer you drive, the more money you could save. Now, if you didn't hear that because you were laying on the horn while driving, let me say it again. Are you a race car driver? Because if you are, you're in the wrong car and you took a wrong turn off the track a while ago. And all those cars you're trying to pass all save money with Progressive Snapshot, while you probably don't. So who's really winning? And if you did hear it the first time, nice work. You'd love Snapshot from Progressive because it rewards safe drivers. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Snapshot not available in California and North Carolina or from all agents.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.